The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and kidspiritonline.com. Our first article today from theteenmagazine.com, from 2026 Vibes to Doom Scrolling. Here are my ins and outs of 2026. This article was written by Mia Barnes on April 27th. Spring is the perfect time to rethink things and decide what the next few months of my life will look like. I love the ritual of setting a quarterly goal and creating a vision board to manifest good things for myself, and recently I decided to add an ins and outs list to that ritual. I was first introduced to the idea on TikTok. It's a fun way to filter what I want to invite into my life and what I'm letting go of. Ins, what I'm bringing into 2026. Here's the energy I'm bringing with me in 2026. 2016 vibes. At the start of 2026, I noticed that my feed was filled with 2016 throwbacks, and apparently Spotify reported that user-generated playlists themed around that year have jumped by nearly 800% since January 1st. 2016 nostalgia is strong right now, and I'm honestly not mad about it. Part of why people miss it is that social media and life in general felt lighter then. There wasn't as much pressure to be perfect, and definitely less AI slop flooding your feed. So this year, I'm bringing back that energy. I want to post without overthinking, romanticize random moments, and just let things be a little messy and fun again. Authenticity over aesthetics. The idea of always being perfectly curated and low-key impressive is exhausting for me. This year, authenticity is in. This means doing things because I genuinely enjoy them, not because they'll look good online or someone in real life will perceive me as cool. At the end of the day, there's no audience watching my every move. Body positivity. Social media affects our body image, and not in a good way. It's so easy to compare yourself to the perfect bodies you find online and feel like you're not enough. I've definitely been there, picking apart photos of myself, wishing I looked different. In 2026, I'm welcoming body positivity. While I'm not going to wake up one day and suddenly love everything about my body, I can try to be kinder to myself. As long as I take care of my body, I'm already beautiful in my own way. More queer art, movies, and TV. 2025 really delivered when it came to queer stories. We got What It Feels Like for a Girl, Heated Rivalry, and The Hunting Wives. That energy needs to continue in 2026. There's already so much I'm excited for, like Love Letters and The Little Sister. Since queer art is so important for social acceptance and dismantling harmful stereotypes, I'm going to explore more art outside of movies and TV as well. My plan is to support more queer artists in my town by attending exhibitions and buying prints when I can. Book clubs, run clubs, and actual community. As much as I love scrolling and chatting to my friends through social media, I also yearn for community in real life. And it seems like I'm not alone. According to Strava's 2024 Year in Sport report, there's been a 59% rise in running club participation globally. The main reason people join is to connect socially. I've also noticed that book clubs are becoming more popular among girls my age. So this year, joining these social clubs and community events is definitely on my in list. Buying less. Buying less stuff and mindful shopping in general is so in this year. Research shows that social media contributes to overconsumption and consumerism. I experienced it firsthand. While I love a good haul video as much as anyone else, I can't lie that my favorite influencers have led me to buy things I absolutely didn't need. It's so easy, too, since shopping only requires a few taps on your phone these days. That's why, in 2026, I want to move away from that buy everything now mindset. Outs, what I'm leaving behind. My outs are the things and habits I'm finally ready to let go of. Dating apps. Apparently, almost 1 in 4 teenagers is using dating apps. That includes me, but I'm uninstalling those apps from my phone. Just like how I want more community, I also want to meet more people in a more traditional, offline way. Maybe it'll push me out of my comfort zone and help me get over my shyness. I also learned that dating apps don't always teach us how to build healthy relationships. So for now, I'm saying goodbye to them. Peer pressure. The FOMO is real when you notice people around you having fun. I've caught myself doing things, or at least thinking about doing them, just because my friends are. A lot of my friends have started vaping, for example. It sounds fun in theory, and I've had friends say it tastes nice, but realizing that it can have serious side effects and lead to respiratory issues has helped me stay away from it and fight the temptation. Luckily, more organizations are looking into how vaping affects your health, so we might get more information that will cut down on the pressure to participate. Other things I almost gave in to because of peer pressure include participating in risky social media trends or harmful pranks just because it seems cool. So, 2026 is the year I say no, even when everyone else is saying yes. Doom scrolling. The whole analog trend on social media has really made me reflect on how much time I spend on my phone. Last year, my screen time was close to 6 hours a day, which is a significant portion of my waking hours. A lot of that time is just mindless scrolling because I crave the dopamine hit. Since doom scrolling can leave us feeling overwhelmed, anxious, and helpless, it's in my outs list this year. I'm not going to delete social media forever. However, I want to do more offline hobbies like journaling, crocheting, hiking, and baking. Wanting to grow up too fast. There's this constant feeling that I'm behind, like I should already be further along than I am. I'm starting to question that. Why am I rushing through this phase of my life? Why does it feel like being young is something I need to get through as quickly as possible? I don't want to feel like that anymore. I'm working on being more present where I am this year. Carrying what feels right. That's it for my ins and outs. I'm not going to use it as a set of rules, but more like a reminder of what feels right for me right now. If you're going to create your own list, remember to have fun with it and include things that will truly help you be better this year. Our next article from KidSpiritOnline.com, The Imitation Game, Achieve the Impossible. This article was written by Joshua Deng on March 2nd. The Imitation Game, Director Morton Tilden, The Weinstein Company, 2014. Running time, 115 minutes. Rating, 4 stars. As I watched The Imitation Game, directed by Morton Tilden, memories of my childhood recurred in my mind, specifically of puzzles. Rubik's cubes, sliding Einsteinian jigsaws, metal twisty turnies. Whilst attempting to solve these puzzles, I never met success initially, but rather, I failed. A lot. I never completed a single Newtonian puzzle on the first try. Only after multiple failures did I ever take a step forward. I endured, although it was a relatively painless experience. Retrospectively, these metal puzzles could never compare to the ultimate Enigma code of World War II. But as a 10-year-old child, solving one felt like I just achieved the impossible. I had overcome the obstacle. Indeed, as the ending credits of the biographical war piece roll, the beautiful yet heart-wrenching portrayal of Alan Turing by Benedict Cumberbatch, the Doctor Strange himself, and his endeavor against an impossible task reveals a tragedy, a hopeless fight against the failures of the world. The story centers upon the life of British mathematician Alan Turing, one of the key contributors in decoding the Enigma code of the German forces, a seemingly impossible task. Alan, a young professor from Oxford, is portrayed as brilliant, yet arrogant, and impossibly awkward, much to the dismay of others. With 5 other mathematicians, he is inducted into a top-secret code-breaking force, charged to build a machine that could decipher the German forces' communication system to win the war. As told in conjunction with flashbacks to his childhood and rapid time cuts, Alan and his team encounter multiple failures in their mission, while Alan himself navigates his own traumas and attempts to be kind to those around him. And so, Alan, with the consistent support from a surprising friend, the brilliant Joan Clark, finally breaks the Enigma code, and the team are heroes, however in secret from the public. Yet, after the British police discover Turing's homosexuality, they promptly prosecute and chemically castrate him, disregarding the approximately 14 million lives he saved. Turing then dies in 1954 in a tragic fashion, unknown and alone. The Imitation Game epitomizes how life and friendship coincide, and most importantly, what it means to be human, and how it feels to fight a mistake-ridden world. Accompanying these themes, every single line of dialogue is witty, as in all British-based films, and the costuming is both visually engaging and representative of the 1940s era. The suspenseful and mysterious orchestral score by Alexandre Desplat remains memorable, a reminder of the race against time that the film embodies. The score also accompanies tense turning points in relationships between the unique ensemble of characters. Inherently, This award-winning film's popularity, in conjunction with its amazing set design and cinematography of a World War II-era landscape, can be attributed to the ensemble cast's brilliant acting. Benedict Cumberbatch's performance of Alan Turing is outstanding, nailing the eccentricities and social ineptitudes that the character embodies. Cumberbatch ultimately earned an Oscar nomination in 2014 for his role. Keira Knightley's role as Joan Clark, a foil to Turing, is fantastic in highlighting a woman's oppressed role in 20th century society. Matthew Goode's, Charles Dance's, and Mark Strong's support is fantastic, entrancing the audience with their instant charisma and popping personalities. All the actors execute the screenplay's dialogue brilliantly. Viewers have criticized the film for its multiple historical inaccuracies and omissions, as well as its relative clumsy narrative structure. For instance, Tildum often jumps between Turing's time in the military and his prosecution as a homosexual without any warning, which can be confusing. Additionally, Tildum could have brought more depth to Alan's identity as a homosexual. Yet, I would argue that, rather than adhering to historical facts and obscuring the message of the film, Tildum highlights the historical context of a homophobic Britain. In doing so, he warns the audience with a stronger message: history is not always perfect. Even the winners can have failures in their systems. Personally, one of the reasons why I feel that The Imitation Game is an Oscar-winning film is because of its unique perspective on failures. While we may not be trying to win a war like Alan Turing, all humans come up against obstacles and ultimately suffer failures and make mistakes. The Imitation Game is permeated by the ideal of failures, both the numerous obstacles blocking Turing and his team during their pursuit of solving the Enigma code, as well as Turing's own struggles in a mistake-ridden world. On the surface, the message is simple and clear. Even after much retaliation from the commander and Turing's own team, after many setbacks due to homophobia and moral hesitations, Turing helps win the war, and so only through many failures can success finally appear, right? Yet, Turing doesn't have a true happy ending. Even after suffering so much, he still suffers at the end, branded as a mathematician who was gay, not as a hero who saved 14 million lives. So, what truly is the message? From my perspective, it is the reality that the world is not perfect. At times, you can put in all the effort and still face failures, or experience success without any mistakes at all, or be faced with the most insurmountable wall. However, Turing, even through all that he suffered, endured. To overcome expectations, one must persevere and not crumble in the face of impossibility. Thus, the film deserves a solid 4 stars. Touching upon particularly mature topics of homosexuality and suicide, it is more suitable for a high school audience of around 14 years old and up. I advise you to watch The Imitation Game, as it will remain in your mind as both a thought-provoking and eye-opening biographical film. Our next article, from KidSpiritOnline.com: How Do Our Mistakes and Failures Help or Haunt Us? This article was written by Karina Vagalatos on March 2nd. Everyone's lives consist of some peaks, or primes, as well as some type of rock bottom. when climbing our mountainous lives, filled with rocky slopes and obstacles, navigation is rarely easy. Sometimes our mountain pass is blocked by a boulder that we must work hard to move, sometimes single-handedly, other times with help from others. Our lives are built on our personal experiences, and we can reflect on the mountains of who we have become based on what we use to construct our lives. Often, people will highlight the peaks of their mountains, marveling at how they look from both a distance and close up, leaving out all the rock bottoms they've experienced. However, life is not only about sharing our summits, it's also about sharing the parts that are a bit lower. Those mistakes and failures are at the foundation of every peak and rock bottom we've hit. Those mistakes and failures have stories, and we are left to question if they help or haunt us. In my life, my mistakes and failures, depending on the scale, tend to haunt me before they help me. One of the biggest mistakes I've made is living in the past. J.K. Rowling's quote, "It does not do to dwell on dreams and forget to live," perfectly sums up what I have been through. I just sat there on my mountain, going downhill, without realizing it, my mind and heart trying to relive the reality I lost without actually making good progress. What happened was this. I had become very emotionally attached, obsessed, and reliant on the softball team I was playing for, my mountain summit. It was my highest point socially, as it was the first time I really had dear friends. Additionally, it may have been my physical highest, too, as I was excelling and confidently in the sport. Being on this team solely contributed to the well-being of my mental and emotional state, and all of my life orbited around this softball team. And then it all ended. The organization the team was under collapsed, meaning my team could no longer exist. It was as if someone died. The grief that I still struggle with is one that words can never do justice to. I was constantly masking my depression following this. I became very triggered upon hearing certain things associated with the team and couldn't seem to move on, letting the avalanche crush me and further roll downhill. The team was everywhere I looked. When I called up my friends, they were the friends from that team. When I picked up a softball, I couldn't think of anything but the past. And since those two things made up so much of my life, it seemed like the world was caving in on me, my mountain's peak becoming a traumatic nightmare. And so that was my mistake, letting myself sulk for way too long in a digressive spiral held me back from maturely appreciating what a special thing I was a part of, which is not to say I was ever ungrateful for it, but dealing with the loss of it was really difficult. It is okay to need time to process big changes, especially ones with so many strings attached. In my case, it had been over a year, and I was still living in the past. This mistake haunted me for a while, and I felt like I failed myself. I felt like I had helplessly chosen to watch myself emotionally wither away, unable to pick myself up, which I felt ashamed for. I went through a lot of guilt because of how I held myself back from making new friends and from fully investing myself into improving as a softball player. I was developing a hyperfixation on the time I had wasted. Ironically, I was able to overcome this by embracing my realization to stop living in the past. That was the true turning point when my mistakes and failures stopped haunting me and really started helping me. This lesson and situation has helped me find balance in my life and has helped me offer balance to others. In similar instances, I was able to maintain a more healthy relationship with other teams and organizations, maximizing my experience but keeping enough distance to avoid becoming emotionally dependent to the same extent as before. The ability to reflect and reminisce, but still move on, is a skill that is crucial to me and one that I hope to encourage in other people in my life. With this insight, I have gently offered this concept to those I know who are going through difficult changes in life, like the death of a loved one, moving away, changing schools, growing up, and so on. Needless to say, developing an even balance between your focus on the past, present, and future is vital. And after learning this firsthand, I can say that that was one of the biggest, most haunting, but helpful mistakes I've made, and one that I'll certainly avoid going forward. All of this is to say that no one's mountain slope is ever smooth. And although those mistakes and failures may haunt us for a while, the help they provide is infinite and worth it in the long run. I personally can vouch for the fact that I am a better person after going through what I did and the takeaways that came with it eventually. The difficult experiences in our lives play a part in who we are and who we can become. Ultimately, our mistakes and failures will help or haunt us. It's just our choice which one we decide to embody. Even though they are interconnected sometimes, they both play powerful roles in our lives as long as they are appropriately moderated. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138.